Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent Breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, it's Real Spoilers, episode 595, as we continue down the path of movies and their misbegotten sequels. This week we will tackle the good half of the equation, which is 1976's Bad News Bears. Before we dig in, let's go around the virtual table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Quick shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, TuneIn. Wherever you find a podcast, you can find us. Be sure and rate and review. And, of course, subscribe while you're there so you never miss an episode.
The Zune Store.
What's that? The Zune Store, yes. And where was I at? Now, I thought you said Zoom, and I was like, Zoom? What?
Why would we at the Zoo Store?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Well, we bought a zoo.
Yes, and Facebook, that's what I was going to say. You can go to find us on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, which is called the League of Show Sharers. And if you want to support the show, the easiest thing you can do to support the show is just share an episode. How simple is that? Just share it with your friends. People who were kind enough to share it this week: Lane Levanway, Julianne Jordan, Gabriel Lugo, Heather Sachs, Chris Williams, Chris Magic Man, Aaron Marlowe, Tammy Sherman Powers, Ralph Tribble, Matt Neglia, Ronnie Castle, and Ryan Terry. Those are Twitter people. I got to beat for not finding Twitter people. But here's the problem, Twitter people. A lot of you don't use your last name. Or you're sharing from like a business account, which is great, but it's like, so I don't know who to actually thank. So
I love that, though. That's great. Yeah. So if you want to share it on Twitter, you can hear your name as well. That's a nice little new feature.
Yeah, so, but just know that, like, we want to do first and last name, so if you could do that, if there's a way to, I don't know, but a lot of people on Twitter, they don't do that, so I don't understand the Twitter world. I understand it, it's like I get Facebook, and then Twitter, kinda, and then after that, it all just disintegrates into Snap.
No, that's the way it works.
Tic-tac, and... Yeah.
Well, I guess what? You don't have to worry about Tic Tac for much longer.
Yeah.
Just in time for Mark Zuckerberg's platform to come out in a week. That
how
doesn't seem weird at all.
Yeah.
What a no wonder someone wasn't pulling any ads.
Yeah, no kidding.
I look forward to TikTok's return on January 21st, 2021. So also don't forget, we do have a Patreon account, patreon.com/RealSpoilers, where for $5 a month, you can get all sorts of bonus content, and you help us out, and we greatly appreciate it. So, anyway, there's all that.
We have a review.
Oh, do we?
Yeah.
I missed that. Well, do you want to read it? Because it's going to take forever for iTunes to open on my computer.
This is from KT and OT.
Okay.
Started off with their Fantasy Island episode and really enjoyed hearing the host bounce off one another. That was pre-COVID, I think, so we were still able to legitimately throw things across the room at each other. Now we're just throwing them at our screens.
Yes.
I like the balance of the observation and working through the plot. Looking forward to checking out more. Subscribe and listen now.
Awesome. So thanks. Right. Thank you. That was very nice.
Yeah.
Thank you both KT and OT.
That's right.
That must have just popped up because I looked, I think, on Friday and it wasn't there.
I didn't see the date is July 16th.
But the date is weird because the date doesn't always work because, like, that's the date they wrote it, but it's not necessarily the date iTunes posts it.
Oh.
So, like, there can be a lag time, sometimes a significant lag time, so...
Yeah, but see, Joe is one of those fancy Apple users, so he probably has early access to reviews.
Yeah, right.
Unlike us Androiders.
Lame-os.
Yeah. So anyway, the Bad News Bears, I guess let's dig in.
This is one of the first times that since we've been doing this that I adore the movie that we're talking about. this is a perfect movie. Like, okay, I take that back. It's dated. And there's some problems with some of the language.
Sure.
But yeah. Overall, this is a perfect movie.
This movie is a time capsule.
Yes.
It is. Yes. Yes.
And even though there are some words, some slurs that are used in this movie, I also feel like at some point, it's almost like kind of an edgy after school special because you're not supposed to like the fact that that's being said. And ultimately, you know, the kid that is saying Tanner, when he says those things,
yeah,
like that's not where he lands eventually. There is sort of a mini character arc.
That kid's a little piece of crap.
Well, that's the thing is, like, he's a little punk ass.
He
kid.
Is a, oh,
like he's got the Napoleon complex where he's constantly picking fights. He's using, you know, language that is not okay.
Yeah.
Wasn't okay back then. It's definitely not okay now.
But, you know, if you watch the remake with Billy Bob Thornton, the 2005
I got through half of it and quit.
Oh, directed by Richard Linklater.
I'm with you. I totally. But, like, there is something that's missing,
and it is that grit that's missing. I mean, it's Billy Bob Thornton drinks non-alcoholic beer, and everything's really kind of watered down. Like, it doesn't have the bite to it that this movie does.
I thought they did a really good job, though. Like, it's almost a straight remake.
They don't mess with it much, and I don't think it's awful. It's just. It didn't really bring anything radically new to the equation, so it's just kind of like...
No, it's just an updated version for people that don't want to watch an old movie, right? Like, so, like, Katie grew up with the Billy Bob Thornton version, and she loves it. She had never seen the original, and we watched the original together.
Yeah.
But she grew up with the Billy Bob Thornton one, and she told me she wore out her DVD, but that's the thing, like, you know how it was, you know how it's hard to get kids to watch old stuff. It's not like, it's like when we were growing up, I mean, we've obviously changed now, but it's like if your parents try to get you to watch a black and white movie when you were a kid, it's not that you just don't even try, right? And so I can see why in 2000s they tried to remake this classic movie because kids didn't want to watch a 70s movie. And
also, the kind of the backstory of why they made it, it makes perfect sense on paper, which is he was just coming off School of Rock.
Yeah. Well,
what is Bad News Bears but School of Rock, right? And so, you know, you get the goofball coach who takes this ragtag group of kids and turns them into prodigies. And, I mean, it's the same thing. And so when they wanted to update the Bad News Bears, I mean, on paper, he's a great choice. On paper, Billy Bob Thornton is a great choice. I think one of the mistakes they made with that movie was, so what makes Bad News Bears work?
They cast a kid that's too good looking as Kelly Leak.
Yeah, I mean, I think what the problem is with the remake versus the original is that in the original, those are real kids. They're not actors, which is why you really only if you think about it, there's like 12 kids in that movie. Only one of them truly goes on to have a career in acting.
Two of them.
Who's the other? Oh,
Tatum O'Neal.
Okay, but she started,
already was an actor.
She already was an actor.
Oh, okay. Saying only one person came out of this movie, with a new career.
Right. So yeah. Sure. So Tatum O'Neal. She'd already won an Oscar. Right. So she was their ringer on screen and off screen.
Yeah.
Right. But among the other kids, they were all just people that they found, and only Jackie Earle Haley went on to have an actual career, and even that was pretty spotty. But Bad News Bears, they didn't hire the remake. They didn't bring in actor kids. They brought in baseball playing ringer kids. Those kids were really, really good at baseball, and so they kind of assembled a Globetrotter type version of it. So while they weren't professional actors, they were, I mean, you can't be a professional baseball player at that age, but they were.
Ask the Dominican Republic.
Okay. But they were top tier baseball players. And
that's a weird, like, it's really hard. Like, if you're as good as those kids were in the remake, it's really hard to be bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not an easy feat when you've been playing baseball your whole life to have to go out there and then be like, I can't figure out how to catch this ground ball.
Like, it's not natural to totally. Your instinct is to grab it.
I got to drop this fly ball, the routine that I've been doing 100 times a day.
And the thing is that, you know, but probably part of the problem that they're going to run into is that in 1976, a hyper-competitive Little League team or squad or you know, grouping, the best team would get smoked by, you know, an average Little League team today, because there's so much pressure on these kids to succeed and be good that you have to be good at another level that you didn't have to be back then. Because even in this movie, the really good kids, you still see them making mistakes and bobbling a ball or like not making the right choice in the big game, you know, with, you know, how, where they should throw the ball or whatnot. You're still seeing those mistakes.
Because his dad's a jerk.
I think that, like, they probably felt like they almost had to bring in these kids because the quality of a Little League team would be far improved over the quality of a Little League team in the 70s. Additionally, I think they were following the template of School of Rock, right? All those kids were musical prodigies, but it's a lot easier to find a musical prodigy who can also act than it is to find a baseball prodigy who can also act.
Where is this in relation to Bad Santa?
It came a couple years after Bad Santa.
Okay, so Billy Bob is doing the creepy old man gimmick at this point.
Yeah, this is like the PG version of Bad Santa.
Yeah, right. I don't know, like it maybe because I love that other one so much that the Billy Bob one just does not click. Like, it just has like that Hollywood sheen on it where we've talked about that before, where sometimes the remakes just like have, when they remake these older movies from the 70s, they have this cleaned up look. And
yeah, so the original one, like, there are times when this practically feels like an art house movie. Like, there's lots of handheld camera work and ambient sound. There are significant moments that have no musical score whatsoever, that it just lives in the moment. But then it does these like really like funny kind of cute things, but even while it's being kind of, I hate to say raunchy, because it doesn't really get dirty necessarily, but it definitely is, you know, not family friendly.
The only thing that's even semi raunchy is Jackie Earle Haley is constantly hitting on Tatum O'Neal
and other women. I love that he's like, because he's at that age, because he's just a little bit older than the other kids. He's probably supposed to be, I think, in the 14-ish, and so he is at that age where he's thinking, like, especially the kind of way he lives his life with the motorcycle and the smoking, and he's just kind of like, yeah, I'm an adult now, you know. It's funny, like, you guys refer to this as an old movie. Like, this is my childhood. Like, this is I was born in 1970. I was you know, 5, almost 6 when this movie came out. But I would have seen it on TV a few years later. So, you know, I would have seen it, you know, probably at that point, by the time a movie like this gets to TV, it's probably 78-ish. But okay. So I would have definitely seen the edited for TV version. But I mean, this movie is like, this is what the 70s in suburbia look like. This is, I mean, that Pizza Hut, holy crap.
Oh, I love that. That gave me, because we used to have that Pizza Hut down the street. And I've turned to Katie. I was like, do you remember going to Pizza Hut, first of all, and dining in, and then they looked like that red.
With the fake bricks.
Yeah.
And then like
that big,
yeah. And they serve beer. Like, I remember the Pizza Hut serving. I was like, I totally forgot Pizza Hut used to have beer. And it was, like.
It looked like a swingers club.
I mean, it like really
did. That like, Pizza Hut looked like something from a porno
set.
How
would you know what that looks like?
Don't worry about it.
Oh, okay.
His investigations take him all sorts of places. It's just an occupational hazard.
But could you imagine, like, nowadays, all you do is order a pizza, either pick it up or get it delivered. The fact that you used to go dine in to to a sit pizza down place.
And there was a jukebox and like video
maybe
games.
Some arcades. Yeah.
Yeah. It was, I mean, it was a thing when your parents on a Friday night were like, let's go to Pizza Hut.
Cause I used to as a kid too. My mom would take me to Pizza Hut. I remember this brought back all those memories where I had completely just erased it from my
and you know how I don't know we talk about it tons, but it's come up on the show before how I'm a weird eater, right?
Yeah.
I didn't like pizza. Like I love pizza now, but I didn't actually start eating and enjoying pizza until I was probably like about 13. Oh. And so when we went to Pizza Hut, I would always order spaghetti. They used to serve spaghetti, and that's what I would get whenever we went to Pizza Hut. I was the weird kid.
They do that now still.
They just brought it back.
Yeah.
Oh, did they?
They brought it back where you can get like a 2 for $20 or something. I don't know. There's like big pasta dishes you can get now.
Yeah.
There,
well, spaghetti, the cost on that to Pizza Hut is like a nickel, so the markup's crazy.
They charge
high.
$15 for it.
Yeah, and they just use the sauce that's they left over in the can for the pizza. Like it's all remnants is what
you're
doing.
Yeah, just like, I just throw it together.
Yeah. But anyway, like, and I will say, like, I mean, growing up in the 70s in suburbia, like I knew kids like Kelly Leak. I knew kids like Tanner. I was a kid like Ogilvy. Or maybe Lupus. Maybe I was closer to Lupus. But I mean, like, those archetypes you see, I think because they went and got real kids, and then the director would pay the kids to ad lib because he wanted it to like sound like kids. And so like he would give the kid who had the best ad lib, like at the end of the day, he'd give him $1. And
wow.
And so like there are certain lines, like when Ahmed gets popped in the package and they're like, he needs a stretcher. And the one kid is like a stretcher for his balls. Like that's an ad lib. That's one of the kids just said
such
that.
Such a great line.
And he
that
got
sounds
a dollar.
Like backfire. I get wanting to get some dialogue like that, but if you have 10 kids all trying to ad lib when you're making a movie, that just sounds like a nightmare.
You know, and there might have been times where he's like, you know, no, we're not
stick
doing
to the script
scene. Especially when there's all, you know, scenes where there's all 10 on screen.
Could you imagine 10 of them yelling out different random things?
Yeah. But
this is the movie that made me fall in love with Tatum O'Neal. Like I saw this when I was her age.
Yeah.
And it was just, I was like, yep.
There's an interview where she says, she's like, I have so many people like men that come up to me that are my age that are just like, I was so in love with you.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the first time I saw her. Like I hadn't seen Paper Moon. I didn't see any of that stuff.
Yeah.
But like watching her pitch, I felt like, was it the remake? It was this one where the kid's like, I think I just entered puberty. Oh, no, it's the remake.
It's the remake, yeah.
Where I was just like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
I totally get it.
She was an adorable kid.
She's a good actress. And I mean,
she's fantastic in this movie. Yeah.
And as good as she is in this, if you haven't seen Paper Moon, I cannot recommend it highly enough. It's one of my all-time favorite movies. And she is amazing in that movie. Yeah. Everything about that movie is amazing. But anyway, but this movie was a juggernaut. It made $32 million, which adjusted for inflation would be $144 million today.
On so, what?
On, I think the budget was...
Two?
I think
it was
like...
nine on Wiki.
Really? I thought it was... That seems low. Or high, rather. I thought it was lower than that.
Yeah, especially they weren't paying anybody. They paid two people.
I know
that... Vic Morrow, but...
I know that I wonder if they're backing out like the point deal or something, because I know that Walter Matthau and Tatum O'Neal had points on it. But
yeah, I don't know. I just that's just on Wikipedia. I don't have a budget on IMDb that I can see. But
yeah.
Well, but, either way, that's ridiculous. And it deserved every dollar of it.
Totally. It's but yeah, like this movie was a beast. And it's,
is this the first like kids sports movie? Like that definitely that became a thing in my
probably
era
after this movie.
You yeah. know, like that was a huge thing in
like
my
Mighty
era.
Ducks.
Mighty Ducks and
Little Big League,
Little Giants.
There's a soccer one. Yeah, like there I think it might be like I really don't
The Big Green.
I really don't remember anything. Nothing's jumping out at me that predates this that's about kids sports like this. But I also think that organized kids sports like this was still a relatively recent phenomenon.
Like, sure.
You know, if you think, I mean, if think about the kids movie about baseball team that takes place in the in like what the 50s or 60s, The Sandlot, right? It's the title of the movie. It's a Sandlot. They're not on a. It's a. It's this just is, a. Pick,
it's a pickup. It's a pickup.
It's a
team.
Pickup game that kids are having. So like the idea of organized sports was a relatively recent, you know, phenomenon. It was,
and it seems like it was maybe like a rich kid thing, because you look at the kids from The Sandlot, they're just like jeans and t-shirts and that's about it. Then they play originally, the kid with uniforms.
Yeah, I think originally, it, you know, as it began, it was, and then it, as it got more popular, it kind of, it broadened its reach. But I think initially, you know, and there was probably, you know, parenting was very different back then. I mean,
you ain't lying.
You even see it in this movie, not just the guy like smacking his son, but like the parents, like you never really hardly even see these kids' parents, and like they get dropped off and then the parents leave and then maybe they'll come to a game. Like that was pretty normal back then.
Whose dad is that in the beginning? I can never, it's not Lupus's. Is it Lupus's dad?
No, you're talking about the mayor,
the lawyer. Who, I mean, like, that kid's dad's like, we got to do it for the kids. He's like, all right, see you later.
Right.
They just call them by their last names a lot of times. So it's hard to, like, that Whitewood is the mayor. So
he's just one of the, he's just one of the dads, but he's the dad that put it all together.
Yeah. Toby Whitewood, would that be?
Okay. And then, but he's just like, we got to do it for the kids and it's really important. But then he just dumps everything off on Walter Matthau.
Sure.
But then we don't see him again until he's like sitting in the stands. But yeah, it was just they were a bunch of latchkey kids, you know. They're just like, I gotta go play baseball now.
So he's a city councilman. Bob Whitewood was, because I knew he was some kind of a government thing. So,
but he sued. Like, that's the deal. It's like he sues so that he can put a team together for his kids. Unfortunately, he gets the Bears, not exactly the team that he was hoping for.
Well, you can even tell the Bears are kind of the outcast, because every other team in the league is named after an MLB team.
Yeah, right. You got like the Yankees and the Athletics
and the Cardinals and then
the Bears.
And then you get the Bears. And so, like, you know, they're the only one that's not named after a Major League Baseball team.
Right.
And I know where I grew up, I don't know if it's like this everywhere, but where I grew up, that was kind of the difference in the little leagues in terms of quality. Like, if you were in a league where your teams were named after MLB teams, then you were in the really good one. And if you were playing on like the Devils, then you, then that's the team I was.
Oh, we're named after a hockey team. Damn it.
Right. And so, but yeah, so if somebody's like, oh yeah, I'm in Little League, my son, you know, I play for the Yankees, you're just like, oh, you're in the real Little League.
Oh,
you're
not. Your kid's pretty good.
Right.
I played in CYC, so that we all were just, you know, a bunch of Catholic kids playing baseball. They wouldn't let us play against the other kids. They just made us play against each other.
Crusaders and
let's talk about Walter Matthau here. He is so perfect in this role. Like, what a great grump. He plays that perfect. I mean, obviously, that would follow him to several roles in his career.
I mean, that was kind of his bread and butter.
Yeah, he's the grump with the heart of gold.
Yeah, he's so good in this role, and at times, you know, getting to be where you just hate him because he's such a jerk. And from the moment he pulls up, and he's just like, he just doesn't want to be there. He's got his beer, and he's dumping his whiskey, bourbon
It's one of my favorite things. He's like, he dumps out half the beer and then pours like bourbon or whiskey into the beer can just so we can get a double shot.
Yeah.
He was the third choice for this role.
Who are the other choices?
Who else was it?
They offered it to Steve McQueen.
Okay.
And then they offered it in a radically different direction, Warren Beatty.
Oh.
Both of those would not have worked.
I could see Steve McQueen, and I think Warren Beatty.
Warren Beatty could have done it.
I think Warren Beatty, it becomes a much more slicker film. It gets more of a sheen to it, and it's more of a feel-good, family-friendly thing. I don't
Steve McQueen, you know what I'm thinking about it. Steve McQueen could be like almost like Tom Hanks in A League of Their Own.
Yeah,
because I could see that for sure.
Yeah, I just don't see Warren Beatty pulling this movie off. But again, it's hard to imagine anybody other than Walter Matthau. He's so good, and he's great because he helps this movie. It doesn't shy away from its uglier moments. You know, when he's yelling at the kids or passed out on the field, or and it's interesting the way it plays in both eras, because, like, I feel like that scene of him passed out drunk on the field back in the day was played was almost like it was for laughs. Ha,
oh, it
ha,
was.
Ha.
I think it was for laughs.
And now it's more just like, ooh, this guy's this guy needs some help of his own. And but it still works,
yeah.
Right? Like
yeah.
It's still like it works on. They didn't play it so like Otis the Town Drunk that you can't read it the other way. Like it's and that's where that kind of art house vibe that it gets really benefits itself and helps this movie age because you never get the feel that they're endorsing some of this behavior. They're just documenting it, you know?
Yeah, right. That's I also think it's just we talk about it being a movie of the times, and I just feel like that kind of behavior was more accepted.
Yeah.
It's just like, well, sure. yeah, he's just, you know, drinking with the kid. You know, I think you see it in Mad Men as well. Like, there's a scene in, like, the first season of Mad Men where Don Draper is putting together, a clubhouse for his kids.
Yeah.
And he's spending more time just getting sloshed than putting... And January Jones, who plays his wife, is just kind of like, yeah, that's... All right. Like, it's very... It's just a different version of life back then. We're just like, I guess he's just going to get hammered while he's putting together that clubhouse or teaching the kids to swing a bat.
Totally. I mean, like, there's a part where Engelberg is like, you can't have open liquor in the car. Like, that needed to be said because that was pretty new and not in every state. There were still states that didn't ban it. So, I mean.
Yeah.
You know, like that. Then nobody, and there's 10 kids piled into a convertible with the top down, no
sitting
seat
on the
belts.
Back.
I mean, there's...
I know that they could never do that today because of safety purposes, but don't you just love seeing a movie where the driving in a car is not green screen?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they followed him around driving in a car. Those kids were in a car. Those kids were on a motorcycle. I just mean, I mean, I know it's selfish and obviously safety is important, but when you see a movie and they actually filmed it as opposed to the Ricky
right.
and Lucy driving with the thing moving behind them.
Not only were the kids on motorcycles, they were kids on a motorcycle with no helmets.
Right.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah. He's definitely wearing a helmet in the remake.
Right.
Yeah.
But I will say they do that in the remake is they've got those kids in the car and he's, you know, I'm sure that he's not driving and it's a safety thing.
They're on a trailer or something.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And then Lupus falls out of the car, which I thought was funny, but.
Yeah, don't lean against the door.
Don't lean against the door.
And then all of a sudden, hey, where'd he go?
So just going to get into it. Walter Matthau, you know, the movie opens with Walter Matthau's character pulling up to a Little League field and he's you know he gets the money from which I guess was illegal, like he was being paid to coach when
I don't think it's illegal. It's just shady and it shows that like this guy sued to get this team created and there wasn't really much of a demand and he couldn't even be bothered to do it himself, so like it was just he wanted to win a fight but he didn't want to do any of the work.
That makes sense. I just thought like he paid off a guy.
And I don't think they want the kids to know.
It was for the kids that they weren't getting...
They're trying to image it to the kids is like, we went and got this guy who was used to be a professional baseball player, and you're going to be amazing. And really what he got was a guy who was a professional baseball player for about 45 seconds, and he was the town drunk, and and they got...
And now he's a pool cleaner.
And they had to pay him to do it. You know what I mean?
So he gets there and he's watching. He's like, all right, let's go practice, I guess.
So they had to basically the thing is they had to add on an extra team because all the other teams were full. They wouldn't take these kids that they didn't want on their teams. And so it's not like they put them a couple of them each on one of the existing teams. No, they had to make up a team, meaning there's no equipment for them. There's no team names
uniforms,
that aren't chosen.
Yeah.
It's the leftovers. These kids got all the, you know, there's nothing for them. There was no planning to have this team.
No. So they get out there, they're starting to play, and it's very apparent that they suck. There is not a single good player on this team. They're just a bunch of kids.
Would you say it's bad news?
I would say they are very much bad news. I love that he starts... I don't know how he starts it on the... Oh, he bunts the ball. Like, he's hitting balls to kids, and they cannot get it together. They can't do anything. And he bunts a ball. This is one of my favorite scenes. He bunts a ball, and nobody moves. And he looks at the catcher, who is a heavier set
Engelberg.
Kid. Engelberg. And he's like, that's your ball.
Engelberg's like, the other one that's just the worst. Man,
Engelberg is the, I don't know. He comes off more just like a dope.
Oh, he is so annoying. He is that, you go do this. I don't, blah, blah, blah. Oh my God. I'm like, shut up.
So he walks up, he gives Walter Matthau a bunch of guff about going to get the ball.
This is a great script. That whole interaction, that whole thing where he's like, keep you on your toes and whatever. Like he's like, the catcher goes and gets the ball. But why didn't you tell me? Well, it's the element of surprise. And the script of this movie is really tight, which why when we get to Bad News Bears Go to Japan, I'm a little mystified seeing as the screenwriter came back to write it.
Yeah, like that's really surprising that they bring him back, and it's so bad.
That's not a baseball movie. We'll get to it, but it's not a baseball movie.
But the script, the dialogue in this movie is so good.
It's great.
This is a really tight script, and it's funny and well-written. And so anyway—
Joe, do you know the other— this guy's written, I think he wrote three screenplays that I could think of. This one, Bad News Bears Go to Japan. Do you know the other one he wrote, Joe?
Bad News Bears.
Monster Squad.
Yeah.
Almost as good.
I have no idea.
He wrote The Thing. He wrote the
Carpenter version.
Yeah, he wrote
no
that.
Way.
That's well. That's okay. Look, if we're gonna talk about The Thing versus Monster Squad, that's not really
but
a contest.
I think the difference is why this one is so much better is that he like this was a passion project for him. So this is Burt Lancaster's son, and I think he had polio and he couldn't walk, and then like part of his getting better was the therapy was for him to go join like to play sports, and I don't think he enjoyed it, and you know this whole thing is kind of you know, it really is very much excoriates little league baseball and competition with kids. I mean, none of the children are enjoying playing baseball. And we'll get to it, but in my opinion there's one good scene and Bad News Bears Go to Japan, and when we get there, I'll explain why I think it's the only good scene in the movie. But
interesting.
But you better
save it, because there's not a lot to talk about.
There is not. But no, none of the kids really seem to enjoy baseball all that much.
I kind of disagree. I feel like once Kelly and Amanda,
they enjoy winning, but they don't enjoy baseball.
Oh, see, so at least with Amanda, I felt like, who is Tatum O'Neal.
Amanda's only playing baseball because she wants him to be her dad.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't know. I guess I felt like once she gets in there and start like when.
Yeah, I think she enjoyed it by
when she strikes out.
I think she enjoys winning. I think she enjoys the other kids on the team and the camaraderie. But I don't think that she has. I don't think any of them have any great love of baseball. Like
that's
you know what
fair.
I mean? Like left to their own devices. I don't think any of them would be there.
Well, we know Amanda wouldn't be there.
Right.
You know?
I mean, what about Ahmad who loves,
Okay, Ahmad seems to, you know, but even then it's like, you know, he enjoys the black athletes who have succeeded at the highest levels. Like, that's great representation and, you know, so he has passion for those role models, because especially back then a black kid wouldn't have had a lot in pop culture, right?
Sure.
And
sure.
So he enjoys that even, and so in his mind baseball is the path to that. But I mean, I think you could make the argument, I mean, you know, they're still there doing it, so maybe, but none of them ever seem to really come to baseball just for a love of baseball. They all seem to have some underlying motivation as to why they're playing baseball.
It's a good point, though, because to elaborate on that, if any of the kids really loved it, they would practice and be better. Like, they are so bad with zero skill. They could play catch. They could hustle. They really do show that they have no dedication to wanting to get better. It does almost seem like all their parents were like, you're going to get out there and play sports, and they dropped them all off.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's the difference with the Sandlot, right? Like those kids from the Sandlot, those kids could play.
They love baseball.
They love playing baseball.
Yeah. If you're playing a pickup game, you're there because you want to be. And Little League, not so much. And I think that was part of what the screenwriter was kind of tapping into from his own experiences, is that there were a lot of kids that were there because they were told to be. I was one of them, right? Like, I mean, I didn't, not with the screenwriter, but I mean, this, you know, this aspect, like, I was made to go play sports. There was just this mentality
T-ball.
Of like, this is what you're right, T-ball, and this is what you do. Your kid goes and does this, even if your kid has no interest or, you know, ability. And that's what the Bears are for the most part. They're kids that are either disinterested or they're just like, sure, if that's what you want, I'll go do it. But they don't really have skills. They don't really have great passion. They're just doing it because that's where their if their parents had dropped them off at the ballet studio, they'd be taking ballet right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it's weird. Like, for me, it wasn't a matter of, like, I don't want to do that. It was just part of life.
Yeah.
Like, you played baseball in the spring, you played soccer in the fall, and then maybe something in the winter. And
I think that's what a good chunk of this team is. They don't hate baseball, but it's just the parent, you know.
Yeah.
It's just baked in. The parents are like, this is what you do. You're playing baseball this year. Okay, you're playing eight. Baseball. What are you going to do? You know?
Yeah.
So we should say the team, reading off Wikipedia here, the team is comprised of a nearsighted pitcher who is Stein.
Stein, yeah.
Rudy Stein.
Who, I gotta tell you, when they bring these kids back for part three, they got them at the most awkward points of their life in yeah. part three.
The half of them they brought back.
Good yeah. Lord. Yeah.
So you've got an overweight catcher, Engelberg, a foul-mouthed shortstop, which is, who is that little jerk kid that we were talking about?
Tanner.
Okay. An outfielder, Ahmad, who dreams of being Hank Aaron.
Him running away, like, where did Ahmad go?
Yeah.
And he's like, he took his clothes off and ran up into a tree. And I was just, at first I was like, that's problematic, but okay.
Yeah.
But he has a good reason.
No, he does. Once you get to the reason why, you're like, oh, okay, I get it.
Two non-English speaking Mexican immigrants, which I thought that was a hilarious moment in the beginning.
And both those kids, they had to teach them how to speak Spanish. Neither of them.
Oh, no way.
They're both like, they're American. They grew up in America. They had to teach them phonetically how to speak Spanish.
That's great when he tells everyone, okay, just get out to the field. I don't care. Go play wherever you want to play. And they're just sitting there. And then the little smart kid is like,
they don't speak English.
I think my dad says that they're Mexicans. They don't speak English, and they're just staring at him. That's a great moment that requires no dialogue, but those two kids staring at him.
Yeah, that smart kid is the son.
Oh, is he the son of the?
That's the okay. Yeah, the smart kid that is like, you know, there's stats.
Yeah, there's a smart blonde. Okay. There's a smart blonde kid that kind of looks like Tanner. And that's
Toby Whitewood, the son. Okay.
That's Toby.
And then the other smart kid that does all their stats is Ogilvy.
Oh, and that's Ogilvy. Yeah. Okay. So then you've got Ogilvy, who's like the nerd that has all the stats, and you've got Lupus, who's the kid that doesn't really talk and really gets bullied by the other kids. And
the booger eating moron.
The booger eating moron. Yeah. Well, doesn't say moron, but yeah. All right.
Oh, no, he man. Does. He calls him other things, but he calls him a booger eating moron. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought he used the R word.
No,
I'm pretty sure that he does.
That's in the new movie, and that's what I didn't even get to say. But my point with the new movie was it's such a dated movie that even though they replaced all those other bad words, in the new movie they call them the R word, which is now you could never say. So you have to take these movies for what they are at the time, and it doesn't mean that it was okay then, but it was true to
socially acceptable.
It was just true to the
use
time.
Those words,
right?
Yes.
If they didn't, then it wouldn't feel as authentic. So while they're not endorsing it or saying it's a good thing, they did make the kids feel authentic at the time because it's just like how kids used to say that's gay or that, you know, that's just it was the vernacular at the time, and that's why, you know, it's not said now, but these were different times. So you just have to take it for what it is the whole point,
right?
So, okay, so back into the movie. So they're just horrible. They can't do anything. The whole beginning, first third of the movie is just Walter.
Stein's your pitcher and he can't pitch. Like they are the worst. Yeah.
It's just a bunch of montages, like a bunch of clips of them trying to field the ball and it goes past them and they don't know how to put their glove in front of it. They don't know how to catch a ball. They don't know how to throw a ball. It's just, and it's really funny.
Finally, Walter Matthau's like, all right, I'm, you know, the first game against the Yankees, who's like the best team in the league. with a coach by Vic Morrow. And that's Vic Morrow, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
He has a hard job here because when we get to the scene where where his son is throwing at kids, like he's not, he didn't pull a Johnny from Karate Kid where he's like, sweep the leg, right? Like the kid got pissed and threw at another kid and he got pissed at his own son. Mm-hmm. So like, did he go too far with his reaction? Yes. Does he have a right to be mad at his own kid? Absolutely.
Yeah, it's
like
a
he even says he's like he could have hurt somebody.
Yeah, no, he just shows that even though he's been a jerk this whole time and win, when he starts to lose, you really see him. I mean, I know we're jumping way ahead, but you start to see him break. He's getting so mad at the kids and he was like all, you know, he was fine. He seemed like he was fine because everyone was winning and doing fine the whole movie and all their other games. And then he really treats these kids like garbage when they start losing, and it shows how competitive he is, and he's not there just to have fun. And so,
and in regards to, like, you know, his reaction to the kid, yeah, the kid shouldn't have done that. But the kid didn't do that in a vacuum, right? Like, the kid because the dad has this win-at-all-cost mentality, yes. Don't ever lose, that, like, well, this is, I mean, if that's the natural consequence of something like that. If that's your mentality and that's what you push, then this is what the kid does. Oh, now there's a line?
Well, yeah, look at him outside of baseball. So throughout the movie, he's picking on... Which one is it? Lupus. He's picking on, they're bullying these other kids anytime they see them outside of the baseball diamond. Right. And that is another consequence. Like Tom said, when you teach people to win at all costs and you treat them like crap, because you know that whenever this kid didn't pitch right or whatever, you didn't see off screen, but you can infer that he just wailed on him and kicked him while he was down and like beat him into being a better baseball player instead of encouraging it with positivity and all that. So he created a monster, so to speak. He's created this bully that's gonna not only be aggressive on the field, but it's gonna be aggressive to other kids and not treat them well and be crappy to people. And it is his fault, certainly. And I think he probably had that realization once he took it too far. It was a little bit of reflection where, like Joe said, he did, his thinking was in the right place, but then he also realized that he
goes way too far,
that it was because of him that they're there. And, you know, he's starting to lose people that he loves and cares about because he's being viewed as the monster, really, that's created all these other monsters.
And I got to tell you, Greg Kinnear as this character was perfect casting.
That's great casting.
Like, Greg Kinnear as always comes off as like a smug bag. And, like, you know, like that undercurrent where he, you know, he's nice to a certain point, but you know deep down he's a prick.
Yeah.
My only complaint about Greg Kinnear is that he's really good at comedy, and so sometimes he still kind of has a lightness about him that Vic Morrow did not have.
Vic Morrow had an edge.
He's a serious actor. He's a tough guy. And that when he's getting mad at those kids, like, it's a little scary. Where Greg Kinnear he never really rises to that level of scariness.
In the remake, when he's talking to Billy Bob Thornton, he's like, I mean, come on by and to the Subaru dealership, and he gives like the little slogan at the end. So you're totally right, Tom. So
I
anyway,
like it, though. I don't know.
I didn't like that movie. I couldn't even get through it because it just didn't click for me.
You've got too much love for the original.
That's probably true. Yeah,
I didn't. I saw the original movie when I was a kid, and the way they talked, the things they said went over my head. I was too young to understand them. So I was watching it through a fresh perspective, but I hadn't seen it enough to where I have any great love for it. It was
so wonderful.
It's a really enjoyable.
Top five baseball movies of all time.
Wow.
For me.
It's really enjoyable, and I liked it a lot, and especially understanding it more now. I really appreciated Walter Matthau and everything, but I didn't have enough love to where when I saw the Billy Bob Thornton version, I was like, oh, this isn't as good. To me, I was like, this is kind of a perfect shot-for-shot remake. It's basically modernization. Yeah. But anyway,
with more boobs.
Right. So, okay, so he goes to find Amanda, who's his pseudo-daughter, because he dated the mother for a few years.
I will say, just to finish on that scene with the bunt, where the catcher picks it up and throws it and hits his windshield, and then they immediately go to the windshield, and the catcher's like, you can't blame me for that. And I was like, oh, you little punk.
Because that kid.
yes, I can blame Engelberg you for that. You threw the ball. Like, now he's looking for Amanda, and she's like selling maps. I thought she was selling maps to the Stars, which is the way I always, but they're in Iowa.
No, they're not. No, they're in LA.
Yeah.
Oh man. I could have sworn somebody said they were in Iowa, and I was like, why the hell was she selling maps to the Stars in Iowa?
Yeah, no, they're in Los Angeles.
Okay. That makes more sense. And he kind of gives her some, he manipulates her a little bit.
Oh,
where he just kind of says, like, you know, you probably don't have... Oh, I guess it's on the second
time when he comes back, but
And
anyway.
She basically says, she's like, I'm a girl. Like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to play baseball. And he's like, okay, like, you know, she's like, I want to do ballet and I want to model and I want to do this. And I was like, yeah, you could do all of that stuff. That's okay. if you don't want to play ball.
And but as far as being socially acceptable, you understand, especially at that time where she's coming
back
from.
Then,
she was raised as a little boy to play baseball by him. And she's now getting to this age where she wants to do these girly things, but she also seeks his approval because she doesn't have a father figure. So she's willing to cave at the opportunity to get him back into their lives, her and the mother's
right.
life. So she's torn between those two things. You clearly see how she's moved on, but also that desperate attempt for validation and
sure.
that relationship.
So she says no, and he leaves defeated. The team gets worse and this is the first time we see Kelly. Like Kelly picks up a ball. And
one of the things that's like that makes Walter Matthau's character likable but also infinitely complex is that like on the one hand, he's like just so blatantly manipulating this girl
yeah.
that you're just like, what a D-bag. But on the flip side, he gets paid the same whether this team wins or not. Right.
Right.
So
right.
he could just phone it in and he'll get the same.
Mm-hmm. And he does, you know, for a while.
But he wants to win. He wants to win at least at the beginning on behalf of those kids. And then that'll shift. And
I think so. I disagree. I think he wants to beat Vic Morrow.
OK,
he does not.
Yeah,
care
but by
how
the end of
it,
he cares about.
But
the kids.
That does shift.
Yeah. Yeah. By the end, he does. No, by the end, he does. But like him going to recruit Amanda and to recruit Kelly.
I see.
Like is he
yeah.
wants to beat that. He wants to beat the Yankees.
Sure.
And he doesn't care how he does it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I do love that we see in the beginning of the season, like Kelly Leak is driving around on the field, brand new field with the motorcycle. And they're just trying to chase him down. And he's just, you know, being a street kid, and then somebody picks up a ball, or he's standing like off to the side, and he chucks a ball. It's almost like the same scene from A League of Their Own, where the black woman picks up a ball and throws a 90-mile-an-hour fastball to Gina Davis, and she's it's like, yeah, I'm really good at this game, but I can't play.
Yeah.
So Kelly Leak does the same thing, where he launches a ball from like center field, and Walter Matthau is like, who the hell is that kid? And he's like, that's Kelly Leak. And they're just like, oh,
he's the best athlete in town.
He's the best athlete in town. And
could you imagine a 13, 12 year old kid or whatever in a movie smoking a cigarette? For a movie,
it's not a fake cigarette.
No,
either.
It's like they, it's no. like this kid is a little badass driving a motorcycle and he smokes. Okay, Jackie O'Haley, here's a cigarette. Light it up.
Yeah,
he was like, "Don't worry, my career will be based around this cigarette."
yeah. Smoke up, Johnny.
Yeah. So Walter Matthau goes back to Amanda and manipulates her pretty much big time, where he kind of reverse psychology, basically, where he says, you know what, you're fine. Your curveball's probably terrible anyway. Don't worry about it. And she kind of says, she's like, my curveball's 12 to 6. It's got like a 6-inch drop. And he was like, bull. So they start playing catch. And then Walter Matthau kind of says, look, I'll pay for the modeling. I'll pay for the ballet. But you gotta pitch. And she was like, fine. And she agrees. Of course, she comes on the field, and Ogilvy is just like, no way, girls can't play baseball. And then she throws a
ball
at him.
She could throw.
Yeah.
She must have practiced.
That's the thing. There's a mechanic thing that is not – it's not – like, being a pitcher is all about mechanics, mm-hmm. right? Like, there's just – and that's not something – you can just do.
No, she must have practiced.
Like she
because
had to.
It was in camera. I was waiting to see if there were a bunch of cuts or whatever, but you see her all in camera throw that ball, and her pitches look great.
Yeah, they brought in a coach, and she learned how to do it. They also said that there's a lot of bad pitches that are on the cutting room floor.
but love that when she does what's in the movie, she can really pitch. And
one of the things I love is if you watch a baseball movie and the dramatic home run, if you watch like the initial swing, you can tell them like, that's not a home run. That came off the top of the bat. Like,
totally.
That's not going out of the park. That's going into the pitcher's hands. Yeah. That's where that one's going.
So meanwhile, we should jump to Kelly is just chilling on the bleachers at one of the practices, smoking a cigarette, and the Vic Morrow comes over and he's like,
"Well, the date thing happened."
Oh, did that
right?
Okay.
Like,
she tries
Amanda
to enlist him.
Tries to enlist him in playing ball, and they say, "Like, look, you can beat me in this if you beat me in this game of pool,
or something?
Air hockey." Yeah, you're right. It's air hockey. If I, Amanda says, "If I win, you play ball. If you win, we can go on a date." And he was like, "Cool, let's do it."
And she just, you see her cut to the scene. She's walking to the car. She's like,
that's a brilliant cut.
Yeah,
it is.
Right? Like, you don't see the game. No. You just see her walking back to the car.
Says everything.
Dejected.
Defeated. Right.
Defeated. And then she gets in the car and she's like, "I don't want to talk about it." And he's like, "I'll see you tomorrow night." And
yeah.
Walter Matthau's like, "What's tomorrow night?" She's like, "Oh, we're just going to the Stones concert."
Oh my gosh.
Like, No.
And that's another great scene between the father figure and the daughter. So he's been out of her life for all this time, but he's just like, "What concert? Oh, look, 11-year-olds don't go to rock concerts and it's the Stones." And, well, he better not get handsy or whatever that whole conversation is. It's great. It's so
There's
well
even,
written.
Even the other line that I love is where Amanda gets hit in the chest with like a baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like,
"I don't have much there, but what's there doesn't feel good."
That's a great line. Like, that's a fantastic line.
See, like, I remember, I've hardly seen this movie, but there are lines that I can just remember because they're that memorable and the script is so good.
It's so good. So she loses it. Is Kelly sitting at the field and Vic Morrow comes up and is just busting his balls. Like, he's like, "Get out of here. You don't belong here." And then finally he's like, "Cool, I'm playing."
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And at that point,
that turns everything around.
Yeah.
Like the Bad News Bears starts winning because they've got this all star pitcher and this all star fielder.
Yeah.
Because he's playing
hitter.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Oh, and we didn't mention the number in that first game that the Bears lose.
It's like 20-0.
It was 26-0 in the first inning. The Bears didn't even get to bat yet. That's how bad they are. And
that gives an idea as to the scumbaggery of
that the coach wouldn't be like, "Yeah, let's."
He was. Well, no, even Vic Morrow's like, don't quit. Like, you got to teach him some resolve. You got to teach him some
determination. Well, for two things, right. I mean, in a little league game, once it gets to 10 or something, the coach should be like, "All right, let's start getting out on purpose," or whatever. You know, let's turn it over. Let's
right.
not, you know, it's for fun. It's little league. And then he doesn't do that. And then he's like, "Well, they're going to call the game in 15 minutes anyway. Don't be quitters." Yeah.
And even Walter Matthau, this is the moment you see some heart with him, where he's like, "No, you know what? We're not going to let these kids get trounced any more than they have to be."
And that is a tough call to make, though, because you don't want to teach them to be quitters. And sometimes you don't win, which this movie will drive home.
Brilliant. But, so good.
But at some point, too, like, you're just destroying people's self-esteem for no purpose.
Well, they got to go back to school, and the kids are going to say, "You lost 106-0. I mean, what's
but
worse?
But they're also
going
to go back to school and hear that they quit or that they had to stop the game because they were going to lose so
badly.
Well,
I know,
there's no good answer.
There's no good one, but still, the worse you lose, the more embarrassing. I mean, at some point, you've got to call it.
Got to call it a day.
Yeah.
So they get better.
They get better, and it's, I think, where the remake, and I didn't, did you, anybody else watch the second one? I didn't watch the second one.
I didn't, Tom did.
Breaking Training?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
I watched all three, I did not watch the remake.
Okay. There's no heart, which is weird to say about a Richard Linklater film.
Yeah.
Because I feel like he is really good at getting, like, some emotional stuff and, you know, making you feel for these characters. In there's so
I like the remake. I
hear you. I just didn't.
I don't dislike. I think we're all over the spectrum. Like, Joe hates it. Kevin likes it, and I'm like right in the middle. Like, I enjoyed it fine. I've never revisited it. I watched a couple of scenes on YouTube, but
I just don't have any love for the original. Like, I do like it. I really like the original, but I don't have that "I grew up with it my whole life" thing.
Sure,
so
sure.
I don't have that love to where I'm like, yeah, this is a solid remake. I could see where it's a little more modernized. It's slick,
and,
but
like, for someone my age who did grow up with it, you also have to remember there weren't other movies like this, right?
Yeah.
Like,
right,
you grew up with a whole host of movies.
Sure.
Like,
yeah, kid sports movies when I was like 6 to 38.
We rattled them all off. There were tons.
I mean, and that's just a few of them. Those are just the ones that you can, that everybody knows. There's hundreds of them out there.
Sure.
Air Buddies, I don't know.
Rookie of the Year.
So, Oh, yeah.
Angels in the Outfield.
The Kid in King Arthur's Court.
Yeah.
He doesn't play baseball in that. It's the same actor. He doesn't play baseball in that.
But that, yeah, he
Jousting
does.
Jousting is a sport, Joe. No.
He plays baseball?
No.
What does he play?
It's the same kid.
What does he play?
Just goes back and he just goes back to King Arthur's Court.
No, what's the sport he plays before he goes there?
Okay, so just because he plays baseball. Rookie of the Year is like he's a pitcher for the Cubs.
Right. I'm just saying he still plays baseball in A Kid in King Arthur's Court.
Well, I will say it is the same actor.
Yeah, it is the same actor.
It's the same,
yes.
It's the same kid, yeah.
Thomas Ian Nicholas.
That's right. Who I always get confused with the guy who plays Ron LaFlan in Silicon Valley.
Oh, really?
The lawyer? Look at that. The lawyer from Silicon Valley looks identical to that guy.
I don't know. I grew up with Rookie of the Year nonstop. Like, that was my jam.
And American Pie?
Well, I mean, it's a good movie, but Rookie of the Year growing up, that was my jam. Because that movie perfectly captured, like, as a kid, to think about going to play Major League Baseball, that's the
dream.
Because
your tendons are too tight,
that's
the only way
you can.
That's
the dream. It's such a cool, like, wish fulfillment thing as a kid, that movie. And yeah.
Oh, I think that movie's a lot of fun. Yeah. I saw that in the theater. I love that movie.
It's great. So,
So they're getting better, but there's also Walter Matthau starts to like kind of enjoy being their coach. Like he enjoys that they suck.
They grow on him. The kids, he doesn't enjoy that they suck.
No, they're getting better.
He starts to like they're getting better and he likes the kids as much as he won't say it.
Right. You know? I do love that he gives Lupus a bunch of guff, and not in a bad way. Lupus is a weird kid. Like it's just you know.
But also the team is starting to become a team. So you talk about the one which one is the Tanner that protects Lupus?
When Tanner sticks up for Lupus
that kid Tanner's been such a little jerk the whole time, but when they start picking on his teammate, it's one of those like, well, if anyone's gonna pick on him, it's gonna be me.
Doesn't Jackie Earl, doesn't Kelly say that? He's like, maybe it is Tanner, where he's like, I can pick on him, but you
and
cannot.
It's that trope you've seen a million times where so you get the kid of the coach, the Vic Morrow's son and another guy at the hot dog stand or whatever, and they're picking on Lupus and they put ketchup in his hat and all that stuff, and then Tanner sticks up for him. So the team is starting to actually care about one another,
right?
And they're sticking up for one another.
So basically, it's becoming very apparent that they could win this thing.
Well, it's crazy. So, how many games are in a little league season? Good Lord! I was looking at the scoreboard, and they were 0-3 toward the beginning before Kelly came on, and then the Yankees were like 20-0. I'm thinking, are they playing every day of the week during the summer?
When I used to play, we would play on like practices would be 2 times a week, and then we play on Saturdays.
Right, but these kids must have had games every day.
That's
good
all
Lord.
We would play, yeah.
I just was surprised where I'm like, wait a minute, they're losing so much. They're going to be able to come back and be in second place. How many games? But anyway.
Yeah, they don't give you much insight as to what the schedule is like, because it's like they're just all of a sudden in the championship, which is my only real complaint about the movie is you don't really see the progression up the charts, if you will.
No.
But from Jump Street that that's where this is going.
yes. I guess back then you wouldn't know that's where this was going.
But that's kind of how sports movies in general work. And also just narrative structure. You really have only been introduced to one other team. Of course they're going to play that team.
Sure, sure. Right. So realizing that the championship is on the horizon, I do also kind of love that Amanda never calls him like by his name. She's always calling him like Butterbean or
Boilermaker
and like never calls him by his real name. Always giving him a little bit of guff just for fun.
I thought she called him by his last name. I thought
she does every once in a while. But if you go back and watch it, she does
his first name. So his name is Morris Buttermaker. No one in the entire movie ever refers to him as Morris. Everybody calls him Buttermaker.
I think they do in the very beginning.
I don't think they do.
No, I never heard that name.
I think it's just in the credits. They call him Morris Buttermaker. And then,
but I heard that. I thought that she always called him Buttermaker.
She calls, but there's a lot. I can't remember who says it, but there's a lot of like nicknames thrown around for him, like Boilermaker and Butterworth.
She calls him Boilermaker.
Yeah, and Butterworth, and
yeah. So, I knew Tanner.
He just takes
Tanner
it.
Calls
I loved
him.
It.
Boiler crud or something, right? He calls everybody crud.
Yeah, he says crud or cruddy 11 times in the movie. Yeah.
So realizing that the championship is going, it could happen. He tells Kelly, he being Walter Matthau, just take everything. Like, don't let these kids touch the ball. You take every fly ball everywhere, and we'll win this game.
Which, I mean, they're really bad. They're still,
but you know, this is the moment
but
where
they're
he
not
just,
really bad, because they wouldn't be one game away if they weren't really bad.
But I think they're that because of Kelly. I think
you can't win games. You can't win games with two people.
But you can't depend on them to always be the best. And so
yeah,
I've been on teams where I watch this happen. I mean, this is a real thing. Like, I, you know,
yeah.
Well, later on, when Kelly decides to stop being a ball hog, and then they just still don't catch the ball, it's like, yeah, you guys are not good.
Well, I mean, he proves the point. Like, it's definitely like, well, I guess you.
I mean, I'm just saying, I see where they're coming from. I mean, Buttermaker wants them to win for the kids and everything. Like he says, you want to win a championship, right? And I get that it's like, oh, but that's not fun, and it should all be about fun, but these kids aren't that good and they want to win. Like, I think he's doing it out of a good place still. Like,
yeah,
it's a complicated issue.
It's very definitely complicated. And it's hard to really pin down what his true motivation is. And I don't even know if he knows what his true motivation is.
I don't think he does, because toward the end, when he realizes what he's doing, it's like, wait a minute, what's the point here?
Yeah. But, like, no, none of these kids are going to play in the majors. This isn't a World Series game where it's your job. And of course you're going to put the best person in. You know what I mean? Like, It's just like, and ultimately that's the point of the movie, and that's what makes the movie, I think, hold up all these years later. I don't know that people would have the same affinity for this film if they won.
Yeah,
probably not. It's so, here's the thing. Major League is the adult rated R version of this movie, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's the exact same thing.
Sure.
It's the exact same premise, just a bunch of ragtag guys that can't play.
Rocky.
The coach that... Rocky, yeah, that's very true.
Which comes out 4 months later, 5 months later.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, it's weird that it shows you where the country was at psychologically in the 70s, that you have...
Well, that's weird. Stallone was a production assistant on the Bad News Bears? Huh. No, I'm just kidding. Interesting.
But it just says a lot about, like, where we were psychologically in the 70s, coming off of Vietnam, and there was a recession, and oil shortages, that you have two sports movies that are extraordinarily successful, that spawn multiple sequels in an age where sequels were not super common like they are now. And they both had the protagonist lose in the final scene. Like, I find
totally
that fascinating.
The underdog that you want to win, you don't get that win.
So the game before the championship, they win, but Jack Uralhaley is being a total ball hog, and the team starts turning on him. They're very frustrated at him, and he's like, you want to go for a ride? You want to go get drinks or pizza or whatever? And everyone's ignoring him and mad at him, and so he starts to realize that, like, he doesn't have any friends.
He
no
made
one
a mistake,
likes
too.
Him.
Right.
Yeah, he's doing this because Walter Matthau's telling him to, and they're winning, but also why? At what cost? No one likes him, and even though he's winning the game for them, he's not winning their respect. And so where does that lead into the championship, and then he starts just not playing?
Well, that, and then Buttermaker and Amanda have a blowout.
Yeah.
Where, you know, he kind of gets, I don't know if he had been drunk or if he was like, that's the thing is, like, I'm trying to think if he was sober when they have this. I think
what happened, I don't remember.
I don't think he's ever entirely sober, but he wasn't, like, wasted. But she tries to basically fix him,
get him and the mom back together
with the mom, and basically
have a little family
day, and he's not having it.
That's terrible. That scene
even to
is
the
horrific.
Even to the point where she's like, she doesn't have to come. Like, it could just be you and me. And he was like, we're not going to be a thing. This isn't, like, when this is all over, you're going to go back and I'm going to go back and we'll see each other next year. And she was just like, but it doesn't have to.
It's horrible. And Walter Matthau is so good, and you hate him, and you can, what he really.
Well, Tatum O'Neal is so good too. Like,
right. Well, sure.
The two of them all with each other.
The way that Walter Matthau portrays Buttermaker you can really tell that this is a character that hates himself. He hates himself and is so scared about getting into a relationship because he knows he's going to screw it up. He knows he's a screw up. He's a drunk. He's a loser. And he hates himself. And so he doesn't let anyone close. And he breaks this little girl's heart, who obviously cares about him, sees him as a father figure, and they've gotten close, and he won't let her any closer, and she's just trying to do something nice, and he's so scared of commitment. He doesn't want to get back with the her mom because he knows that he would screw it up. He left the first time and he's embarrassed of his actions, and he knows that he'll abandon her again. So all of this with his reaction, his blow up, you can see it by the hurt as he's doing it and after he does it. The self-loathing is just like boiling over. And it's really a heartbreaking scene. It's a great scene, and both of them, like you said, are excellent.
Yeah, and I think this is why you know, the one ringer in the movie had to be Tatum O'Neal, right? Like, they had to bring in a real
she's
child
so
actor
good.
And not,
yeah, this was the time that they needed somebody. If this is, no offense to the girl that played Amanda in the remake,
yeah,
but there is something missing.
She's not an Oscar-winning actress.
Correct.
At the age of 10.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same thing that's missing in Butch and Sundance: The Early Years.
Totally.
Yeah. It's like,
I don't know,
same...
man. Like, I kind of disagree, only because
how?
So, I feel like the Butch and Sundance prequel,
like, that girl's fine, but she's not Paul Newman, is my point. It's the difference between...
So, but you're talking about a prequel and a movie, right? I'm talking about two of the two same movies.
He's just talking about where the kind of the X factor dissipates.
Yeah, this is a non-point. It was just a comparison.
Yeah, but I want to point out real quick that Tatum O'Neal was not the first choice. They had actually cast a different actress in that role.
Anyone we know?
She dropped out to make Taxi Driver.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Jodie Foster.
Jodie Foster?
It was supposed to be Jodie Foster, and then she...
Okay. I can see that working, too.
Absolutely.
That absolutely plays.
Yeah, well, and the real funny thing about that to me is that they attempted to make Paper Moon, which had starred Tatum O'Neal, into a TV show, and it only lasted a few episodes, but the actress they hired to play the role for the TV show, Jodie Foster.
Oh, really?
So they must have, at that time, they must have been the hot child actors. Like, they were the go-to.
Totally, yeah.
So wait, just out of curiosity, what happened to Tatum O'Neal?
I think she had a pretty big drug problem for a while.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And she made
okay.
a couple other movies after this. She made Little Foxes with Christy McNichol. And, you know, she was still making movies. But I think she had a drug problem, I think.
Didn't she have a really troubling relationship with Ryan O'Neal?
She did. Like, she's had a lot of, like, a lot of drama in her life.
She's got some health stuff going on now.
Really?
Does she? I mean, she's...
I think so, yeah.
She's no kid. She's... I mean, I'll be 50 this year, so she's probably, you know, 60s or close
sure,
to
sure.
it, you know?
So, okay. So, yeah, we get to the big game, and Amanda is banged up. Like, he's kind of wearing her out. You know, she's out there every game.
She's
and
pitching, yeah, with no relief because
no
Stein
relief.
Sucks, and she's pitching nonstop.
Man, does he suck.
Yeah.
So her elbow's jacked up. This is where we talked about the getting hit in the chest, and we know that she's hurting for certain. But she pushes her way through it because she loves Walter Matthau. Like, that's the bottom line. She will hurt herself. She will put her body on the line for him no matter what, because she is desperate to have him in her life. And it becomes very apparent to Walter Matthau as the game is going forward, and they're winning. No, they tie it. They tie it up, and maybe they tie it up. That's what, because the kid turns on his dad. Joey turns on Vic Morrow.
He has the meltdown. That kid, actually, if any people who love old-time sitcoms recognize him, there was a show on for a few seasons that starred Bill Bixby called...
Yeah, it was called The Incredible Hulk. We all know what it was.
Called The Courtship of Eddie's Father.
Okay.
And that kid played Eddie.
He was also really good in the moments that he had that he needed.
He was. He's really good, and he actually went on to be a punk rock singer, sang for the Dead Kennedys for a while.
That's amazing.
Oh, okay. Wow. But they're pretty much neck and neck, and this is where what's his face, Jackie Earle Haley, he decides he's not going to hit because the team doesn't like him and all that stuff. And Walter Matthau ends up convincing him, He's like, well, I'll just take you out of the game. And he's like, okay, whatever. And he ends up hitting. And
is this the scene where they're going to walk him and then he swings across the plate?
I think that's a little later.
Okay.
Yeah, that's later. But he basically wasn't going to play. And then don't all the kids get mad at him? And Walter Matthau's like, it was yes, my decision.
Yes, there's a fight on the field.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he kind of says, he's like, look, it wasn't his fault. Like, I told him to do it. It's on me. We're right here. We're at the finish line. We can win this game. All we have to do is finish this game and we win. And they start to make the comeback, and Tatum O'Neal is pitching her arm off, literally.
Yeah, it gets to the point where she can't.
But Buttermaker kind of has a shift, and he's just like, no, we're going to win this with everybody.
Right.
And he starts letting the kids play, even though it's not necessarily good strategy, because he's like, everybody plays. Like, and
well,
so
that's when he has that big blow up in the dugout. He starts yelling at the kids, and
he he has a massive meltdown in front of those kids, and he realizes.
And then he just looks at them without any words. They all look at each other. He sees how defeated the kids are, and then he realizes, "What am I doing? What is this for? These kids are, they were starting to win and enjoy it and enjoy the game. I took them from nothing to kids having fun, and now I'm just no better than the Vic Morrow coach."
Right.
And he realizes it's terrible, and so that's when, after that realization and him hating himself even more,
he puts in Lupus and Stein.
Yeah, he puts in Lupus. Yeah.
He sits Amanda. He puts Amanda's like elbow in a bucket, and even then she's like, I can go, and he was like, no, like, you just go sit down. Yeah. Like, this is I need to be your father basically at this moment and say you got to sit down. Mm-hmm. And then so what happens is they take the lead because Vic Morrow's son refuses to play.
He gets a grounder hit to him, and then he refuses to throw it to first, and basically
just like keep going.
Engelbert ends up getting like an inside the park home run because he won't relinquish the ball, and then the dad comes out and
smacks him.
He throws a brushback pitch, the dad, and then hits a kid, and then the dad comes out, smacks him, screams at him, and then the next play.
Yes.
He does this with Engelbert to like get back at the dad, and then basically just walks off the field. That's such a great scene. I think a movie that was really trying to like overreach would have had him like throw it at the dad or say something at the dad or like take a swing at
where
the
he
dad.
Says, I don't want your life.
Yeah. Or like, but where he just walks up and just drops the ball on the ground wordlessly and walks out.
Yeah.
And then the mom walks out with him.
Oh yeah,
it's a great moment.
You know that Vic Morrow is effed.
He just ruined his life.
He's ruined like his life in this moment.
Like
yeah.
His son hates him. His wife is probably leaving him.
Right.
Like yeah, it's
because it's, this isn't the first time he's done something
clearly,
like this.
Yes.
And the mom is that's her breaking point. You know, she says you son of a bitch or whatever she says to him. And no, it's great. The kid, I was like, what a movie moment when he holds that ball and lets him get the infield home run.
Yeah.
And then it goes over to him without words. It is a perfect scene. It's so great. And so from there they tie it up, but then I think then there's the big dugout blowout.
Yes.
And then he puts Lupus in, and then they get way behind.
He pulls pulls Amanda and puts in Stein as the pitcher. They put in Lupus, they put in all the kids that never really played. They put them all in. And Walter Matthau just kind of, he literally just sits back and watches.
Yeah.
And just lets it happen. And we go back to the original Bad News Bears in the beginning of this movie where they just suck. Yeah. And he just accepts it. And he was like, these kids were having fun, and I'm not going to take this away from them at this point. And they lose. Like, that's the big thing is
they're behind by four, and then they walk Jack Uralhaley. They intentionally.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. Then unintentionally walk Stein or something.
Rudy
like that.
Leans into the pitch and takes the hit.
Right.
So he get on base. And then, no, they don't walk. They walk Kelly Leak the first time. And then in this last scene, because Kelly's the one who's at the plate.
Yes.
At the end. So I think, like, Engelbert gets on and then.
Which couldn't have been a mistake, right? Like, they did that on purpose with the poem, right? Like Kelly at the plate.
That's Casey at the bat.
Oh, it's Casey at the bat. Dang. The entire time I was like, that's kind of brilliant. Never mind.
So, they load the bases or
they've got
Kelly,
people. They've got, yes.
Kelly's the winning run at the plate.
Kelly's the tying run.
Is that what it is? Okay.
Right. They're behind by four, so the bases are loaded, which would tie it up.
Yeah.
Right. And so Kelly, they're going to walk him again. and then
he reaches across the plate and hits.
Yeah, and smacks it.
Yeah, and then it's just a mad scramble, like everybody's.
And then he is tagged out.
Play at the plate
at home.
Yeah,
play at the plate, tagged out at home, and they're okay with it.
Yeah,
like even the kids are like, yeah, all right, like we got here and we almost won.
And it's great because here's the deal: if you're a kid watching this movie, there are only a handful of kids who watch a movie like this and have won the championship.
Yeah.
But most kids will lose or never make it there.
Right.
And so, like, even though it feels like a bold choice, it's such a brilliant choice to be like, because at this point, you're so a part of this team that you're like, you probably have never won a championship.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to resonate with you. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, but that doesn't mean, just because I didn't win doesn't mean that I'm a loser. And if that's how you define your life,
right,
go F yourself. And yeah, so, like, so with Tanner being a sore loser, it's great because they're sore winners. So it's okay. Like, it's, you know, like it's yeah, like in another right, movie, right, be right, like, right. That's not a cool way to behave. But it's like, no, these people have been such bagocks. That yeah, so yeah, you still won, but you barely won. Like mm-hmm. and you know right. what? Like you might have won a game, but we're gonna win at life because, you know, we're happy people and we don't let this consume us in the way it does you.
Yeah.
So, you know, take your cruddy trophy and shove it up your ass.
And that's exactly yeah. And I do love that he's giving him beers like in the dugout.
Yeah.
That's
hilarious.
And that's kind of how this movie ends. This is I think it is top five baseball movies of all time for me, but it's also a brilliant movie.
It is like, such a
top
a good
to
movie.
Bottom. It is a fantastic film.
So real quick before we go, would you like to hear what the alternate ending of this film was?
Sure.
They win.
So, Bad News Bear, the original ending has Kelly Leak stealing a Mercedes after he found out his mother was having an affair with Bob Whitewood, the councilman,
oh,
the one who hired Buttermaker.
Okay.
There's a police chase that ends up at the stadium where the game is taking place, and then Kelly grabs a bat, hits the winning home run, but can't go home because the police were there waiting for him. So it still has a very 70s vibe that, like, he won, but he still can't enjoy it.
Wow.
So
I think this ending is better.
Yeah.
Far better, especially because, like, then the movie adds this whole other subplot that we just don't need. And real quick before we go on, I know when we talk about these movies to give people an idea of where people are at in pop culture at the moment, I'd like to list off the top 10 grossing movies of the year. So here are the top 10 grossing movies of 1976, coming in at number 10, Midway. Number 9, In Search of Noah's Ark. Number 8, The Enforcer.
Oh, so I just rewatched that.
Number 7, The Bad News Bears. Number 6, The Omen. Number 5, All the President's Men. Number 4, Silver Streak. Number 3, the remake of King Kong. Number 2, A Star is Born. And number 1, the aforementioned Rocky.
Okay, so wait. Number 1 is Rocky, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we got a remake of that, sort of, with Rocky 6.
Sure.
We have a remake of Midway.
Right.
We have a remake of A Star is Born.
Right.
We have a remake of King Kong.
We've had remakes of King Kong. We've had remakes of The Omen. We're living a remake of All the President's Men.
We kind of get that with Spotlight. I feel like Spotlight is a pseudo remake of that. I won't count that, though.
Well,
but out of the top 10 movies of 1976, right? 76? Yeah. Six of them have been remade in the last 5 years,
because that's what they do.
Yeah.
They're fishing.
Well, King Kong's been a little bit longer.
No,
that's right.
Skull
Island. Yeah. I was thinking of the Peter Jackson one. So,
but I just
think
it's funny that many.
Yeah. The world that we live
so
in.
So anyway, that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. Follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. Find the show online, Facebook.com/RealSpoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. Wherever you're getting your podcast from, be sure and subscribe so you never miss an episode. And, of course, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/RealSpoilers. So that's it for this one. Coming up on the next one, we will tackle the Bad News Bears go to Japan. Until then, Benny plays for the Dodgers.
Jimmy Vaughn.
You want Vaughn?
I know he hadn't done very well against this guy, but I got a hunch he's due.
Good job.
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.